Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
That's going to be great with this some vodka tonics.
Oh, I was going to say with an iced coffee.
Here are the dogs. Here are the dogs. Oh, the dogs are walking right outside now by the atrium.
So, you know,
American Terriers.
You know,
they are big.
I think the more common name for an American Terrier or American Staffordshire Terrier is Pitbull.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that looks like a Pitbull.
Yeah, American Terrier is a Pitbull.
They're beautiful dogs.
Not the singer.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that thing on top of me.
Well.
But later in the show, we'll list five things you do.
Taking out of context.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Alrighty then, plausibly live, because we're live when we're doing it. It's just not coming to you as we're doing it, because we're starting this thing about 8 in the morning. From Chatter, at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue and Jennifer Street, northwest, about a block inside the District of Columbia line. And we're open for breakfast, by the way, at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Great crowd today.
Well, there's nobody here yet because it's not yet 8 in the morning. But a great crowd for us
for breakfast would be
like 6 to 10 people. Yeah. I'd be thrilled with that. Gary Braun is with us. Tori Clark is with us. Michael Kornheiser is with us. Nigel is going to run the board and do the news. Barry Svrluga will join us later. Michael Sands of Calvert Woodley and the Cheeserie is here. His brother, Steve, texted me at 6:11 in the morning with a detailed review of the Capitals
and
why they are different this year. And I suspect they are. We'll talk to Svrluga about exactly why the Capitals stay alive. In fact, they dominate. And what we are looking at here, it seems to me, if you are paying attention to the playoffs in basketball and hockey, is the same playoff as the Celtics against the Wizards, in which one team is clearly and obviously and undeniably better than the other. Even if it's 3-3 or 2-2, whatever it is, the Wizards are clearly better than the Celtics. And the only chance the Celtics have is if Isaiah Thomas scores 50 points, because they don't have anybody else who can score. And the Capitals are clearly better than Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh had, by the end of the second period, they didn't have 10 shots.
Yeah.
They had 8 shots by the end of the second period. If you look at this, this is the one note that I took. So it was 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, 5-0 in favor of the Capitals, which meant going into the third period, I mean in the middle of the third period.
Well, I think 3 minutes left in the third period.
Okay,
something like
so
that,
what this means is over a 4-period stretch in playoff hockey, from period 3 in game 5 through period 3 in game 6, the Capitals had outscored the Stanley Cup champions 8-0.
Boom.
What more do you need to see to convince you that they're better? They're going to win the Stanley Cup. They are. They're going to win. This is the year. This is finally the year. They're going to actually win the Stanley Cup.
Tuesday, May 9th.
What? Okay.
Look,
I understand. I understand that the last time, maybe it wasn't the last time, but one of the recent times that there was a Game 7, and the Game 7 was in Washington, was against the Rangers, and the Capitals lost 5-0.
Laid down.
That's okay. I get that part. Mm-hmm. And I'm not Steve Sands who can tell you exactly why the Capitals are different this year. I can't tell you why they're different. But it just seems to me, and maybe, Tori, maybe I base this on one set of events last year, and I think I might, that LeBron James down 3-1 in the championships against Golden State, facing two on the road, right? The two of the last three. He won them all by himself. And they won that game, which made coming back from 3-1 not unthinkable and not unbelievable to me at that very time. So please exercise a mom's word of caution.
Okay, I'm so tortured. And by the way, the mom has got to come back to Sidney Crosby at some point. Did anybody see him crash headfirst?
Yeah,
he was hit hard. He was hit hard. I don't know.
Someone needs to get that guy off the ice.
Yeah. Okay.
Really, really sad. But anyways, I think there are so many reasons the Caps are doing better and better and better. They've started to get Fleury's number. And whatever you say about Fleury being the backup goalie, he was playing really well, but they have started to get his number. Secondly, it's a very selfless team. Right? Ovechkin not playing great. And he says, okay, I'll move down. So these other guys can move up.
Can you imagine Chris Paul doing that?
Right.
No.
No. No.
Guys that you never heard of 2 or 3 months ago are playing really, really well. So it's quite a few things. Caps fans are so tortured by this, right? All in, want them to win, want them to win, want them to win. And you just go back and forth and saying they've got it this time. They've got it. They got the mojo.
They've
got the teamwork. They've got everything. Trotz is great. And then you go, boy, are they just setting us up again? Are they setting us up again? So it will be incredible.
Well, no, so you have that fear.
I always have that fear. And by the way, it's more for my children and my husband than for me, right? They'll kill themselves.
Yeah, I don't
they will kill themselves.
I don't know how any Caps fan could not have that fear. I mean, I hear what you're saying. Intellectually, I understand what I'm seeing,
they're
even when they were down 2-0.
They're
even when
better down. Than Pittsburgh.
It's not even close,
they're
Tony.
They're better.
Certainly not over the last four periods. Now, remember, four periods ago, they were down 2-1 in the third period of a game that was going to eliminate
back.
Them. Yes, they did. And since, they have looked tremendous. We obviously...
By the way, and they're not winning games by one goal.
Correct.
Which is exactly what the great fear is. Oh, it's a one-goal game. Right.
This is not the place to get into the X's and O's of playoff hockey. That's
because we're so good at that.
That's Nigel's Icebreakers podcast, which you can hear here on Sunday.
Yeah, directly after
but,
this.
But I think as much of a hard time as we have given him over the years, credit has to be given to Barry Trotz,
absolutely.
Who made the switch.
Absolutely.
Put Andrei Burakovsky, a guy who hadn't scored in 10 playoff games, in Ovechkin's spot, and he has blossom there these last two games with three goals and an assist, and they are flying. I mean, they are so obviously the better team. It's not even close.
Do you not feel exactly the same way about the Wizards and the Celtics?
I do.
It's the same
very similar. And then I would just caveat it by this, and I know I can hear my phone buzzing with the text from San saying stay positive, which he tells me all the time. He's
Michael, your brother.
He is like my emotional Sherpa through this journey. But it's just one game. I mean, the Caps aren't that good that they couldn't lose one game to Pittsburgh, who's pretty good, and last I checked, the defending champs. So.
But that what both of you are saying, you are articulating the inner id of watching the Capitals lose year after year.
It's like battered wife syndrome.
They're much better than Pittsburgh.
Yes.
It's so obvious that they're better than Pittsburgh.
It is.
And Pittsburgh's a defending Stanley Cup champions. They're better.
Yeah.
They're better.
Can I rave about Oshie for a minute, too?
Please.
Again, I don't know the technicalities, but he scores last night, and it's the first time he scored in this series, which is amazing. The guy never quits. He never, ever, 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 ever gives up. He's always hustling. He's always looking out for his teammates. He's always looking to pass. He's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
See, we have watched this over some long period of time. Michael is younger. What are your thoughts about the Cap? I mean, you've seen them fail and fail and fail. I don't know if this is inbred in you to such a degree that you too are afraid of this. I'm not afraid of this.
I'm more afraid than you are. I will say this. The first period last night, I'm not watching the Caps game exclusively, and I don't
feel back and forth with the Nats.
I don't feel comfortable to watch until they have a nice little cushion, just because I've seen enough.
Oh, that's brave
old,
of you.
You know, own goals, redirected off of a defensive player that goes
Russian
in.
Spy.
And the takeaway I have is the Penguins fans left in the middle of the third period.
Yeah.
That might be the last time they see this team all year.
They were angry.
And they're the way that I would take that if I was one of their fans is, we know we're going to go down and own you in your own arena, because we have. We've already won down there twice. So I'm a little bit more worried, just because it comes down to, do we see the Holtby from the last 2-3 games, or the Holtby from the first couple games? Do we get off to that fast start? Are we able to take advantage of the power plays, which have not been as fruitful as we would have
and
liked to
please,
see?
No overtime. My heart can't.
Okay,
take it.
I'm going back into this analogy, because the Wizards lost the first two games too.
Yeah.
And they could easily have won
both of
those games.
Right.
I understand. I think that the Capitals probably, when they lost those first two games, were suffering from the syndrome of having lost to them last year and being afraid of them. And it took them a while to realize, you know what? We're better than they are. We're actually better than they are.
I don't know why it would take them longer than it would take us to figure that out. They're actually out there.
Better. They're better. They're going to win. And not only are they and then what happens? The Capitals and the Penguins ranked 1-2 statistically in the season this year. I believe the Blackhawks were third. They're out. Columbus was fourth. They're out. I don't know. I mean, the Capitals.
This is the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yes,
it is.
This is it. This is
series
it.
Is.
Michael mentioned the Nats.
And let me just add this one last thing on the Caps.
Yes.
And this is another thing that gives me pause, is over this however many years of choking dogdom, they have always created new and amazing ways
to choke
out, like the 5-0 laydown in the game 7, or do it in overtime. And the one thing they haven't done to my recollection, at least at home, is go from 3-1, come all the way back, then come home and gag the game seven. So they still haven't checked that box.
And so you're expecting them to do that.
I mean, it's just, you can't.
As they figure out new and novel ways to lose.
My kids are not burdened with this history. Yeah. So they just see a hockey team who they think is awesome, and they're very excited. And I just, I can't help it. I flinch.
I think they're going to win.
Instead of watching on TV, I will be at the Nats game just because I can't deal with all of that pressure for 3 hours.
You can't stand all that playoff hockey and basketball. So go watch some May baseball.
So I end up, I'm at Chatter last night having dinner with Carol, and we are sitting in the area where there is no television sets.
Is there an owner's table? Excuse me.
No.
I think you're sitting at it.
No. Okay. So we're at we deliberately decided don't put the TVs in the area where people are actually sitting and eating dinner because let them have a respite from all of the televisions, which is fine. The TVs are great and they're in the other areas of the bar. So Jimmy Crilly is here and Crilly walks up to chat with me and says, it's a good thing you're in here where there are no TVs. And I said, why? He said, because you'd jump out the window. I said, why? I said, Gio Gonzalez just allowed 3 home runs in the first inning.
Right.
3 home runs in the first, and they're down 4-0 in the first inning. I mean, and Gio had been great all year in terms of his ERA. I think it was under 2. ERA was under 2.
That's correct.
So it jumped up, so they allowed 3 home runs, and then they stopped. They stopped the onslaught at that point. And the Nats worked their way back a little bit. I knew the game was over when Trinan and Blanton were both going to pitch. They had scoreless innings, which, of course, will make people think, oh, they're better than you think they are. No, they're not. They're not better.
But it wasn't over. But Harper, made it close.
The last act of the game was one of the weirdest things you have ever seen. The Nats are in position to win. They have the winning run at the plate.
Right. But the tying run on second with one out.
They have second and third, one out, down two, tying run at the plate, and there's a hard ground ball to first, so there's 3, right, Michael, 3 unassisted right there, and then for reasons beyond anyone's comprehension, Adam Lind doesn't go to the plate, doesn't do that, and so both Adam Lind and Trey Turner, who's pinch running, get caught in no man's land, and there could have been
very
a quadruple play, but it's only a double play. What were your thoughts on that?
Adam Lind doesn't play a lot, and I think he's just a little bit of out of practice. And when he does play, he's coming in just to pinch hit. He's not running the bases.
Right.
I look at yesterday, and I just think there's one inning that changes the game. And if you look at the history between these two teams, the Orioles always step up and hit home runs in their ballpark versus the Nats. I look at it as one inning. I'm not too worried about it. It was great to see Harper hit one out.
Yeah,
it's a 4-game series. You know, I'd love to see them split up in Baltimore. I'd be content to see them split down here. That's better for regional baseball than if it completely goes one way. But it's one inning. I'm not too concerned.
In terms of record, they're 2 of 3 best records in baseball.
Yeah.
The Orioles, the Nats are both behind the Yankees at this point. Kevin Gausman, by the way, he was fresh because he got thrown out of the last game he pitched for throwing a curveball and hitting a guy.
For bending it into a guy.
Yeah.
Well, you were home for the end of that. I don't know if you were watching.
I didn't. I saw it this morning because I was moving around.
Yeah. So in one of those cool things that sometimes happens when you're watching a couple of your home teams at once, right as the Caps are going like 3-4-5 in the third period and just blowing it wide open, in fact, the third goal, which happened very early in the third period, happened right as Bryce Harper was hitting the home run to make it 6-3. But that whole base running thing is happening when the Caps are exploding. And I had to think, I was thinking like the Seinfeld when he says, I'm even Steven. You know, it's like the Caps weren't going to cap. So someone had to cap, so the Nats had to cap. And they just like ran themselves right out of it. It was very odd. Little league level.
It was an odd play.
You know?
We will take a break when we come back. Barry Svrluga is still in Pittsburgh, or is he not? Is he home already?
No, I believe he's still in Pittsburgh.
He was there for the game, so we will talk about these things. We will reprise both of these things. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a SeatGeek ad, and since we've opened the show with baseball and hockey, the SeatGeek ad is the right way to go. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just 2 taps. That's on your mobile phone. That's not necessarily in your car. When I hear the word mobile, I have to think, well, what is it actually referring to? SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. It's nothing quite like being this old and not understanding the references. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person. And SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Speaking of apps, yesterday, finally, Matt Kelleher got Wilbon put. Wilbon now has the ability to get this podcast, which he didn't before. Oh. And Wilbon has one of those exploding Samsung phones. So it took a little while, and we had to put him on sound, whatever these things are. Anyway, Wilbon has an app now. Best of all, with SeatGeek, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do is download, and if you're Wilbon or me, you can't do this. Get a kid to do it. Just download the SeatGeek app, SeatGeek, and enter the promo code Tony today. That's promo code Tony for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This comes to us from Carl W. Daniel.
Are you sure?
Yes. Well, Nigel has to get a ride today. He writes, I'm a big fan from Louisville. I'm submitting music from my band, Sean Sleeps Naked. That's a pretty good name for a band. It's Sean, S-H-A-W-N, by the way. Sean Sleeps Naked. This is I Won't Fall For It, off our latest release, You Changed. If people like this, they can go to SeanSleepsNaked.com for more information about the band.
It's a lovely little song, isn't it?
It's lovely.
Yes. The music that we get
is very good.
It's awfully good all the time.
It's great.
Barry Zwerluga joins us now from Pittsburgh, where he watched the Caps win Game 6, force a Game 7 that I believe they're going to win easily. And I started the show, Barry, by saying to me, it's just exactly the same as the Celtics against the Wizards, in which one team is clearly and obviously and undeniably better. The Caps are just much better than the Penguins, and maybe people in Washington have a difficult time believing this, and maybe everybody does, but does it not strike you? You've watched these games. They're just discernibly better.
And finally, like, that played out on the scoreboard, right? I mean, we had been kind of beating our head against the same wall when they fell behind 3-1. When it felt like, oh my gosh, we've seen this movie before, and who cares if they're out shooting them? They have, by the way, outshot them in 6 consecutive games.
1-2.
They held them to 18 shots last night. Again, for the second time, the Penguins had as few as 18 shots once all year in 82 games. And I thought, who knows in hockey? Because unlike, I think in the NBA, and we've talked about this before, if the Wizards are discernibly better than the Celtics, then the Wizards are almost, how this series is tied 2-2, I don't know. And wouldn't you think that the Wizards would just go to Boston and win Game 5 and come back home and win it in 6?
I would.
Hockey is slightly different because I think anybody who's watched all 6 games would say that the Capitals have carried play, and yet they had to fight back and get back into this position. But, from the third period of Game 5 in Washington through midway through the third period of
8-0.
Game 6 in Pittsburgh,
it's 8-0.
They scored 8 consecutive goals, and they weren't flukes, and it wasn't an accident. The better team was applying a ton of pressure, and honestly, it was odd being in that building last night because you would think with the 2 cups that Sidney Crosby's Penguins have won, and with the kind of just inherent advantage that Pittsburgh has in its kind of overall narrative over Washington, that Washington would be the scared team, that Pittsburgh would be puffing out its chest, that hey, whatever happens, you can't take away the cups that we've won with Crosby or the four cups that we have as a franchise to the zero that you have. And that was a nervous building last night, a very, very passive building that was really the only sounds at a few times were a smattering of boos because the Penguins played poorly. They were sloppy. They were the team that was kind of disengaged. All the things that you once always said about the Capitals, somehow the roles were reversed, and it does feel like the Caps are the heavy favorites going into Game 7, which is
does to me.
A crazy thing to say.
It does to me. Now the cautionary tale is this, that this happened fairly recently within the last 5 or 6 years, that the Capitals came home for a Game 7 in a playoff series against the Rangers and laid down really like choking dogs and lost 5-0. So you say to yourself, can that happen again? I don't know. I don't think so. Not this time. What do you think?
Well, I mean, and the other example to draw on is 2009 against the Penguins when they came up here and forced and won Game 6 in overtime and then went home to play Game 7 when that was still a team on the rise. And Ovechkin had a breakaway early in the game. He could not bury it. Marc-Andre Fleury made the save. The Caps were down 4-0 5 minutes into the second period, and they lost 6-2. So that's why it's like it's crazy to stand here and say, wow, they're a better team, and they're going to be the clear favorite, and they're going to win on Wednesday night. All logic shows you that, but you know, there's no Game 7 with this franchise that doesn't bring with it a lot of trepidation. And also, you know, this isn't just a Game 7 in the first round. This is a Game 7 that is a huge statement or will have a great reflection on Alex Ovechkin's career. He's never been past the second round. Crosby and the Penguins are his most identifiable nemesis. The Penguins are the ones who are playing with house money at this point because, as I've said, they've won the Cups. They've been places that Ovechkin and the Caps haven't been. And in order to shake off whatever sort of ragged reputation that he has among hockey cognoscenti, Ovechkin's got to win this game on Wednesday night. He's got to advance to the conference finals. He's got to help his team get to a place that it hasn't been with him before.
So let me get to what seems to me to be the pivot in the entire series. When you're down 3-1 and a coach who's been there an hour and a half tells the world that I'm taking the best player I've got, a 3-time MVP, and I'm sticking him in the cooler for a while. I'm putting him on the third line. And Ovechkin not only doesn't go crazy, as most people would, but he seems to endorse it. And yet Trotz says publicly this is not a demotion. Can you tell me how in God's name this is not a demotion?
Well, I mean, okay. I can see what he's saying. I also understand the looks of it. And I would say that at the time, if it doesn't work out, and we have the benefit of analyzing this stuff afterwards, it felt in the moment almost like a panic move.
It felt like the end of Barry Trotz as the coach. It felt like that to me.
This is either going to work and I'm going to extend my stay here, or we're going to lose in 5 games and I'm going to have taken the most important player in the history of the franchise and marginalized him in that final game. And I'll talk to you from, you know, Winnipeg or something.
That's what I said on TV.
It's worked. It's worked.
Yep.
And it's worked for a couple of reasons. The flip-flop was with Andrei Burakovsky, who has been terrible in the playoffs. He gets a promotion by doing nothing. He gets promoted to go up and play with Backstrom and Oshie. Oshie, by the way, who had also not done very much in the Pittsburgh series. Ovechkin can take it as not a huge demotion because he's still going to get the power play minutes, and so much of his ice time is he's on the power. You know, they flip-flop the power play units, and Ovechkin remains on the ice. He double shifts a lot on the power play, so they're not taking that away from him. But I also think there was a part of Trotz who watched Ovechkin in Game 4 just be kind of mysteriously disengaged. And the worst parts of his kind of the things that he's been criticized for over the years, kind of not skating back hard on defense, back checking like he should, and just kind of floating around instead of playing with, you know, all that kind of trademark energy that that kind of defines his game when he's at his best. I think Trotz faced somewhat of a credibility issue in his own locker room. If he didn't do something, if there weren't some ramifications where a lot of these guys were pouring everything they had into it, and it didn't appear in game four that Ovechkin was. You're totally right. To Ovechkin's credit, he went down, he played hard, he scored in game five. And really, now Burakovsky is energized. He scored twice last night and has three goals in the two games since. So Trotz looks like a genius when I think he was probably on the precipice of being out of here.
Well, I agree completely. They had a players-only meeting, which only in any sport means there's dissatisfaction in the locker room with the coach and the sort of executives who are running the team, or else you don't have a players-only meeting. And then Trotz comes out and he does this, and he says it's not a demotion, though it looks like a demotion, but it works. It works, and it's the pivot of the series. But this is the hard thing for me to answer is this, and maybe you can and maybe you can't. People will look at a team that wins, having lost 10,000 times in a row, and they will tell you it's something's different. And they'll try to point to character. I mean, deliver me from people who write about athletes and say how mature they are now that they didn't used to be, when they're the same dope that they were last year and the year before. So to your mind, is there something discernibly different, or is it just that they're better? They're just a better team than Pittsburgh.
So that's the crux of it, right? And you really, really, really want to be careful about getting caught up in false narratives that are become
yes.
that way because of what the result is. You want to try to figure out, what do you think of this team before you know what the end result is? And I will answer it two ways. One, during the year, and I wrote this, and then in the Toronto series when they were down 2-1 and they just kind of stepped forward and they won the last three games of that series and finished it in six in kind of businesslike manner. During all of that, I thought, okay, this team feels different than some of the Capitals teams I've been around, and that's a lot of them going back to the beginning of the Ovechkin era. I'm not going to get too caught up in what that means overall. I can't really tell you what feels different. Is it Justin Williams being a guy who's won three cups and knows exactly the kind of steps that are involved and how to respond to different pressure points and how can he get that across to teammates? Maybe there's some of that. Is it, and I think that this is a factor, their goalie, when he plays his best, which he hasn't consistently in these playoffs, but he has the past couple of games, is among the best goalies in the league, and that you need that to advance. But I also would say that, you know, we're a bounce here, or again, you know, they won game five 4-2, but they were down 2-1 headed into that final period. And I'm not going to tell you that, well, I thought they were fundamentally different, but they were on the verge of losing in five games. I mean, it's just such a hard thing to put your finger on. I feel like I felt something different in there all year. But again, I don't want to tie that into, like, the fiber of this team.
No, I think that's I think that's important. I think it is so easy and so sloppy for columnists and writers to just look at the results and say something must be different, so I'll just write that it's different. I mean, you get this all the time about the maturing of athletes, and it's just not true. It's not true. There might not be anything different. They may just be better. So I'm going to move off that now and get to the thing that really affects me most, which is, what can you do with Trinan and Blanton? I mean, what can you do? Does Trinan have any options left? I mean, what do you do
yeah,
here?
Yeah, I mean, that actually, I should know that. It feels to me like Blake Trinan should have an option left. They did do that to him 2 years ago and sent him down to get him straightened out. I mean, so at this point, he is a concern, and I think I said this the last time we talked about it. It's not just that the guy that you named the closer failed in that job. It's the guy that who was a really good eighth inning guy for you last year and could get three or four really big outs to set up the closer. He doesn't exist right now either. So you're doubly hurt. You've got Kelly and Glover on the disabled list. I think things will look a little bit better when they come back, and it seems like they're getting ready. And I know they lost last night, and I know Gio didn't pitch well, and you know, blah blah blah. But there's so many good parts about this team right now, which you want to be careful of. What could happen is the rotation and the offense could be so good that they really are stabilized for quite some time while the bullpen gets sorted out. What you have to guard against is if the offense and the rotation are good, not great, and you are carrying 5-3 leads into the ninth, and then they are blown, that has a corrosive effect on the clubhouse. And that, as I have written, could leave people in the lineup and, yeah, and in the rotation looking at each other saying, well, we're doing our job. Is the front office doing theirs? So we'll see how this goes. I don't think it's like complete crisis right now, but I understand your frustration.
Okie dokie. All right. So you'll come back and you'll cover game seven, right? You'll write about game seven. I think they're going to win.
Yes.
I do. I think they're going to win the Stanley Cup. I actually think
that. It's an amazing thing to say. It's an amazing thing to think. It's not crazy on the morning of May 9th.
All right. Thanks, Barry.
Appreciate it, Tony.
Barry's for Luga, boys and girls. We will take a break. Nigel will come back and do news when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from Dave Smith. It's called Old Man Hands. And he writes, thanks again for playing some of my tunes. I'm hoping they will end up at Chatter on the Jukebox. For the millennials, that's an old record player. For the millennials, a record player is a contraption that played music on disc-like pieces of vinyls that when placed flat on a rotating wheel while having a needle placed on the disc would somehow produce a sound creating music. For more info, ask your parents. Better yet, ask your grandparents. Anyway, like you, Mr. Tony, I woke up one morning and realized I was not going to live forever, so I decided to create a project whereby I would reach out to many of the musicians I have played with throughout the years and get together with them to play some of my music. Since I have played with musicians on both coasts, I started 3 weeks ago by giving a concert at Gonzaga College High School with my East Coast musician friends. Then 2 weeks ago, I traveled back to Los Angeles to play with some friends I hadn't seen in over 30 years. The tune I've sent to you is one I wrote entitled Old Man Hands. As you might well imagine, it deals with aging. I think it will be big with the millennials as it deals with yellow skin, baldness, Viagra, type 2 diabetes, etc., etc. It's all based on the fact that I looked down at my hands a few years ago and I noticed that my hands no longer look like my hands, but more like my dad's hands when I saw him last before he passed away at age 95. We were lucky enough to record this at Cal Campbell Studio. That's Glenn Campbell's son.
Oh, wow.
And we were able to share some heartwarming stories about his dad. Cal played drums on his dad's last tour, which is part of the documentary about his farewell tour, which unfortunately ended early because Glenn was too sick to finish it. School ends soon. I hope to get to Chatter for breakfast before you go on summer hiatus. That's
nice.
A lovely, lovely story. And Michael, explain how, if people want to send us original music, they can.
Well, there's not much to explain. If they want to send us original music, they can email it to jingles at tonykornheisershow.com.
Tremendous explanation.
And you can hear all of the music at the end of this particular show.
That's tough, right, to avoid.
Michael and I, by the way, for people taking pictures, Michael and I wearing Johnny O today.
Johnny O.
If you want to tell the people how to get good clothes.
The Johnny O code is still live. Good clothes is a shot at our shop.tonykornheisershow.com account, which has great clothes.
We have great mugs.
Great mugs.
Johnny O offers a different type of clothing. I'm wearing the coastal vest, which is perfect on a chilly morning.
Perfect on a morning.
And, it says 45 degrees in Washington.
I was in the 30s when I left my house.
Really?
Yeah.
That code is still Tony K, and I am working with their creative team for a Father's Day push that's going to be very, very inviting.
Fantastic.
Let me just shout out. I'd recommend graduation gifts, too. Sorry, Gare. Graduation gifts also.
We're doing fashion shout-outs. I am donning the Nats spring training shirt compliments of Anita from Alaska. So thank you.
And
Anita,
by the way, one of the reasons we wanted to move into the studio, and Michael Sands has left with Peter Bain too. What did you say?
Animated cheese talk. We had to shut it down because we couldn't.
We need to get
in the segment.
We need to get the cheese board on the menu as an appetizer.
Right. One of the reasons we came here, you were saying.
Oh, one of the reasons we came here is because we could own the studio. We could put stuff up on the walls, and we could send video out, and we could send pictures of us out. Have we done any of those things?
Sure.
We just moved into the
studio.
We've
taken a few photos. There's this very conspicuous traffic cone that is over your shoulder single photo
it's
we
nice.
Take.
Well, why don't
we
take
people
the,
wonder why it's there.
It's like our gnome.
It shrouds everything in mystery.
It's a garden
Tori will go out at some point and take it and just throw it out.
Just put it over the sign. Yeah.
And I would also add, as
and
a public service.
We still don't have a sign. We're still not chatter.
Oh, no.
We don't have a sign.
There you go.
We get a sign.
Still how could that be?
Can we get rid of this old sign?
I would add, as a public service to fans of the program, that Timothy, was it Brady? Who was here from Men's
Timothy
Journal?
And Elizabeth is what I remember.
The Men's Journal Men's piece Journal. Dropped yesterday. I guess I saw it online and tweeted it out. I think, Michael, you did as well. And he did a very nice job. He was here the very first day, if
that's
I recall,
fine. Yeah,
right?
That's very nice. So if people want to come in and write about us or talk about us.
Yes, we'd love that.
And breakfast, have breakfast at 8 in the morning is good.
And hypothetically speaking, because some people might have a hard time finding it because of the sign, how badly would people feel if they came in one morning and there was black spray paint across the Chad sign that said Chatter. Just hypothetically speaking.
I'm not going to indulge in that, but it wouldn't be the worst
thing. And it was Tim Bracey.
Tim Bracey.
Yes,
okay.
Bracey. Correct.
Nigel, you have news.
I do indeed. And today's newscast is brought to you by Icebreakers, the definitive ice hockey podcast starring me.
Right.
Hosted by Nigel.
Yes, there you go. Yeah. We all remember Mike.
And it's good that he calls it ice hockey, right. Not just hockey.
Right.
Well, ice hockey. It's not field hockey.
That could be Olympic field hockey.
Well, I do a field hockey one as well, so I like to keep them separate.
First segment, yes. Elsewhere
it's grass
in the NHL.
Yeah. We all remember Michael Flynn, don't we? That lovable rascal.
Yes.
So, apparently, and Sally Yates, the former acting attorney general, was testifying
completely
yesterday.
Completely fabulous.
Yeah,
on
she
the
knocked
stand.
It out of the park, right?
And pushed back on Ted Cruz.
Oh, that was a great exchange.
Well, it's great. Something said, I can't. They did ask her something unrelated, like, I can't believe you voted it, or you shot down the president's thing. Why would you do that? And she says, because remember that point when you swore me in and you said defend the Constitution or something like that. I was doing my job. I did what you asked me to. So she really did fantastic. And I think the key thing that came up, and I know we'll turn to you, Tori, on this, was that she, after Vice President Pence and a number of White House officials came out and said, no, Flynn hasn't talked to the Russians. Well, intelligence officials from the U.S. knew that he had. So Sally Yates went over to the White House and talked to the White House General Counsel and said, yeah, he actually has. You've got to go do something about this. We think he's been compromised by the Russians. And from
That's terrible. He's the National Security Advisor.
From that conversation to the actual time when
How long
did
released, it take?
18 days.
Well,
more than a fortnight. Yeah. So
busy unpacking boxes.
Right. We'll get around to it.
What'd you make of her?
Strong.
I've been in Washington so long that when you hear people throw around words like dramatic and explosive and stunning, you go, yeah, whatever, right? This was dramatic and explosive. And you think about what she said. It was his underlying conduct that he's talking to the Russians about sanctions, like, don't worry about this, right, for the new gang, at the very moment that the administration was enacting sanctions, right, for their bad behavior. And he was lying about it, right?
It's the lying.
It's remarkable. No. It is the underlying conduct. And the line.
Well, no, but I mean, to me, the first thing is you can't put somebody like that in that position.
Correct.
When he's lying to you.
Right. But here's what I think.
Lying to you. He's not lying to Nigel.
Right. Yeah,
at the same time, we're watching her testimony and we're hearing the story that the president, President Obama, also in his meeting with incoming President Trump, says, hey, by the way, now those meetings, when the sitting president and the incoming one sit down, they are set pieces. It's like, hey, good luck,
right.
You know, nice tie. There's the bathroom.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
You'll find the
Here's
ushers the are great, right?
Here's the button.
The fact that President Obama used that meeting to say, hey, by the way, waving you off this guy, let me give you some really good advice, and they didn't take it, stunning. And I can't, you journalists can tell me that the President Obama piece of this, and it was buried in the Post. I don't know why that wasn't a bigger deal and almost parallel with Sally Yates, because I think the fact that President Obama was saying that.
That was it ran on an inside page and not out front. Yeah, and I think it all should have been of a piece outside. Yeah. But that was pushed down because of the Taliban.
Spicer's contention, at least publicly at the at his press.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. He didn't like him. He wasn't a big fan.
That was about that was more of a personality thing. It wasn't that he thought he had been particularly compromised.
Fantastic. Okay, what else?
We'll go to the world of basketball right now, where the Golden State Warriors swept the Utah Jazz to advance to the Western Conference Finals for the third consecutive year.
They beat them by 26 points.
Yeah, 121-95.
In Utah.
Yeah, perfect 8 notes. I think the first time they've swept back-to-back series in franchise history.
Okay. So the network that I work for, and I have to be very, very careful because I don't want to be critical of the network that I work for,
yes.
ESPN. But they subscribe to a service that in, you know, it's sort of a predictive service, an analytic predictive service about what are the odds that somebody is going to win the next game or the next five games or the next 10 games. And if it's football, it's FBI. And if it's baseball, it's BPI, basketball, whatever it is. So in basketball, it's BPI. I don't know what it stands for.
Basketball Prediction Index.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So yesterday on television, they are saying that the Celtics have a 63% chance of winning the series against the Wizards. When if you watch this thing, no, they don't. No, the Wizards are discernibly better than the Celtics, and the Wizards are going to win. And then lower odds were only 60% that Golden State would win game four in Utah and sweep the series. Are you kidding me? It was 100%.
Right.
It was 100%. The fact that this is why machinery isn't really as good.
Robots don't have eyeballs.
Yeah, you got to look at it every once in a while. Golden State and Cleveland are so far and away the best teams. They're the only teams you want to watch. I mean, I sit here now. I watch Washington, of course, because it's my local team. I don't want to watch anything else but Golden State and Cleveland. That's what I want to watch. Now, if Cleveland plays Washington, I'm in on that. Clearly, and I think most people are like
this. I'll take
this.
The Wilbon position that San Antonio and Houston is still an intriguing
care.
Series.
Don't care. Don't care.
All right.
Want to watch the other teams. That's what I want to watch. You're going to opportunity to watch the other teams. They're far and away better than everybody else. They are.
Do you have They're a preference over who would face Golden State over San Antonio or Houston? You just don't care.
I don't care.
Do you have a prediction yet as to who you would favor in a Golden State-Cleveland final?
I would favor Golden State. I think if they shoot, I don't see how you can beat them. Now, last year, they were not as good because they didn't have Durant.
Right.
And Draymond Green probably lost them a series by getting thrown out by kicking 10 to 15 people in the eyeball during games.
And they lost.
Yeah, and they lost game five. And LeBron had this fabulous last three games to go with everything else he's done. But this year I would favor Golden State. Would you not?
No, I think I'm inclined to agree
with you.
Okay, I know nothing about this whole thing other than the Wizards.
Right.
But I did start watching some of the ads because you were talking about some of them last week. I don't understand half of them. I'm like somebody's falling through water and then basketballs are coming down after them. They're so confusing. I have no idea what they're trying to do in those ads.
Well, nor do I. But usually it ends up you're selling an infinity.
Yeah. The car ads are so confusing.
Car ads totally confusing. Like, why would anybody buy a car because Matthew McConaughey fell backwards into a pool?
All right.
I don't know.
Don't quite get that.
What do you got?
Tony Romo is trying to make the U.S. Open at a local qualifying event. And finished up with a 3-over-75.
Even on the back, yeah.
Yes.
With an eagle and a triple.
No shame in a 75.
Yeah.
None at all.
Okay, I'm calling out Golf Boy here to my right.
Yeah, yeah,
who
Golf Boy?
Golf Boy. Before the show.
Nine more years.
Nigel's talking about maybe talking about Romo later. And I said, how great for him, good for him even trying. And Michael scoffed. Said, it's local, whatever it is.
No,
nobody in this building, maybe you, could do better than he did, and God bless him for trying.
So my first question is, I want to see the golf course he played. I'd like to see the location of the pins. I'd like to see the course rating. I'd like to see what the average was for the field. I would also remind you that every single high school player in an area signs up for local
open.
U.S. Open qualifying and uses that to basically puff up their chest and say, yeah, I was trying to get into the U.S.
Let's
Open.
Let's get your puffed up chest out there.
Okay.
I think he's saying he'll do it.
He couldn't even beat a 16-year-old Brian Harman.
I'll carry your bag.
If you want a caddy for me, I have a local qualifier in the next week or so.
When and where?
We can relay that information off.
I would carry for you.
Yeah.
I'll live for you. I mean,
maybe
I can't help
you,
you
can help me.
Other than carrying your bags.
I think if I have Tori on the bag, I could take this local qualifier.
Yes!
Well, I saw the story, you know, when Romo announced, and he's just tried to qualify before. And this guy, I mean, forgive me, I'm a Redskins fan. I actually like Romo.
I do too.
Just a guy whose career is defined by his competition anxiety, in my opinion. I mean, he's made a career out of coming up little. I did not think he was a threat to qualify for the
US Open. The big thing
is 75, which is nice. He didn't make the sectionals.
Whether or not you get through local, when you go to sectionals, all of a sudden you have an onslaught of pros who have not otherwise qualified, and you have international players. They swoop in and they take all of the spots. So the local qualifier is to keep the mythology of the U.S. Open alive for the Tin Cup.
It's theoretically open.
Did you see pictures of him? He appears to have an Under Armour contract.
What happened to Starter?
Yeah.
What happened to Starter? I don't know. Had the Starter hat.
He was wearing Jordan Spieth.
Well, there you
go. No. He was wearing the belt and the hat. And the shirt, he looked like he had a deal.
But
with
in the sectionals is when you get, that was like, was it Shigeki Miyama who came to Woodmont and shot like a 59?
59.
Yeah. I mean, that's when you're getting actual touring pros.
Woodmont, that used to be the last stop on qualifying. Yeah. And if you were going to shoot 75, you were going to be 10 shots out.
If you're going to shoot a 71, you're going
to you have to shoot, it's two rounds, right? The sectionals?
I think it is.
Two rounds.
I think it is.
So you're going to have to shoot two. Mid to high 60s. Right. You're going to have to do that, or you're not going to. It's the U.S. Open.
It's the U.S. Open.
But Torrey does present the show's official position, which is, what was it? God bless him for trying? God bless him for trying.
Bless his heart.
What else do we have?
Maria Sharapova might have a lot of fans. Eugenie Bouchard is not one of them.
No, she's not.
You might remember she called Sharapova a cheater and should not have been allowed to return to tennis at all.
Or banned for life.
Banned for life.
For taking Maldonium.
Yes.
My favorite drug of choice.
Right. Well,
Maldonium.
We all take that.
Just because you like saying it.
I love saying Maldonium.
Well, they met in the second round match at the Madrid Open, and Bouchard beat Sharapova 7-5, 2-6, 6-4, and afterwards said, I definitely had some extra motivation going into today. I was actually quite inspired before the match because a lot of players coming up to me privately wishing me good luck, players I normally don't speak to, getting a lot of texts from people in the tennis world that were just rooting for me, so I want to do it for myself, but also for all these people. I really
felt
support.
How about that? How about basically saying of Maria Sharapova,
everyone hates you.
She's a cheat. Everyone knows she's a cheat. Nobody likes her at all, and I'm happy to have beaten her brains out.
Yeah.
Because when Maria Sharapova is right, she beats Eugenie Bouchard.
Yes.
I mean, because she's one or two or three in the world.
Do you believe that, or do you think Bouchard maybe overstated it a little bit?
I
mean, because she did present it like, oh, everyone hates her.
Here's what I believe. I believe that in the absence of Serena Williams, who's now going to be out to have a baby, and I don't have any idea if she's going to return, that Maria Sharapova is one of the people that keeps the purses up. And Eugenie Bouchard does not.
Yeah.
And so I think tennis players have to vote their self-interest. I mean, they may want to say this about Sharapova because they can win tournaments with her out, but they can't make as much money with her out. So anyway. Oh, is that news? That's a very good.
That's it. Thank you.
Very good news.
Good job, Nigel.
We will be back with Old Guy Radio. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Harry's ad. Gary has the Harry's razor. Michael does. I do. Nigel does.
Oh,
does
do.
Brian, have you gotten Brian the razor?
No, sir.
Harry's razor.
Why haven't we done
Father's
that?
Father's Day.
You know, that would be a very good gift.
That would be lovely.
That would be a really good gift.
Very thoughtful.
For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of its customers. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own blade factory. And by taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price, just $2 a blade compared to the $4 or more you will pay at the drugstore. Harry's is so confident you will love their blades that they're giving you their trial set for free. Just cover the $3 shipping. Now this, given the fact that Tori is upset that her family puts together Mother's Day and her birthday and only gets her one gift,
criminal.
She can get Brian she'll pay $3 and get Brian a Father's Day gift that would really work for
Pretty
Brian.
Nice.
The free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel that somebody said never runs out.
That was me.
That was
it lasted me probably 4 months.
And a travel blade cover. That's a $13 value for you to try. So stop messing around. Get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free trial offer. $13 value for free. Just cover the shipping. To get your free trial set, including a razor handle, a 5-blade cartridge, and shave gel, the almost inexhaustible shave gel, go to harrys.com, harrys.com/Tony K right now. That's harrys.com/Tony K.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Birthday Boy, 68 years old, a lovely age. Billy Joel from Hicksville, Long Island. This is moving out in terms of critical commentary. I love him. He's a Long Island boy. I've told the story of being on that train to New York with Bill O'Reilly just bragging about how they were good buddies and just for hours and hours and hours.
On the three-hour trip to New York.
If Billy Joel had heard that, he would have just sent somebody to shoot O'Reilly in the ear or something like that. It was ridiculous. You have...
The gist of the song is obviously, you know, Billy Joel talking about how people, and he's talked about this a bunch, how he was sort of disgusted with people working all their lives just to get stuff, you know, to get too caught up in that. And this was his song about that. And the only interesting thing I could hear about the recording of it, you know, the song with the part of the song where the car peels out?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so the bassist had a Corvette. And they just hung a microphone at the back of the car, and they said, "All right, just peel out, man."
It's great.
And that's what this. I thought it was just some pre-recorded sound, but no, that was actually.
Anthony works in a grocery store.
Yeah, so there you go.
Saving his pennies for Sunday. So on television now, and it's not now when you're listening to this because it drops at 11 o'clock Eastern and 8 on the West Coast. So it could be if it drops at 8 on the West Coast. There is someone named Harry Styles in a pink suit. And he's singing on the Today Show. And this morning, at the open of the Today Show, they showed blocks and blocks and blocks of young girls.
Been there for 2 days, sleeping
yes.
on the sidewalk
yes.
in New York.
Who is, I'll ask Michael, because Michael's the youngest one at the table. Who is Harry Styles and why is he a big deal?
I'm interested that you're turning to me for that question, considering that Gary and Tori both have... kids who would be closer to
One
the demographic
Direction.
Of One Direction. Direction. He was in a boy band.
Yeah.
Right.
And then he stepped away from the boy band. He was in a very famous short-lived romance with Taylor Swift.
Isn't everybody?
Yeah,
she in the news all the time for going through one boy or another?
Bad romances.
Yeah. She's good.
She's a great songwriter. She's becoming a better singer, but that's I don't know much more about him.
Is Harry Styles
October
good?
1st.
Is he good?
Good. He looks
a little like Rory McIlroy.
You got to like the... He does look a little bit like Rory
Right?
McIlroy.
He looks a little like Rory McIlroy. Right? He's got great hair.
He's an Englishman.
Yeah. Well, Rory's Irish.
Right.
So One Direction
same country,
was a
that's my point.
Very, very successful boy band. My daughter Devon and her cousin Claire and her cousin Katie Rose were very big One Direction fans. And a few years ago, they went to see them at Hershey Park. And I think,
what a lovely place Hershey Park is if you need a tattoo.
And my husband Brian drove them up and just said, I'm going to lock myself in the hotel room with a six-pack and sent the girls off.
Didn't you do a similar thing at like a national championship game? Just like drop them off and go to the bar or something?
I sat in the parking lot with my fellow drivers.
Yeah.
Anyways, so they're there and I kept checking in with him and he goes, I have no idea. They're gone. Well, anyways, 2 or 3 days later, a friend of mine calls up and says, did you see your daughter on Facebook? And I said, I don't really look at Facebook. Why? Anyways, this person was checking things on Facebook, saw people's YouTube videos and things like that on Facebook from the One Direction concert
right.
in Hershey Park.
Right.
And one of the scenes was there's a highway that runs right outside Hershey Park mm-hmm. there in the stadium, this and that. And the One Direction bus is going down the highway, running behind them full speed. Three girls, one of them my daughter.
Oh, my God. That's
and it
great.
Was in somebody's family YouTube video.
So they're
no longer together, tragically.
The groups that were boy bands that I'm aware of, I don't necessarily know their names, but I do know that Justin Timberlake,
yes.
who I think is very, very,
very talented.
That was insane.
Yep.
Justin Timberlake was in a boy band, and he is a big star now.
Yeah, he's a super talent.
Is Harry Styles...
No, I don't consider him on the Justin Timberlake
no, me either.
Level.
What does Sydney think of him?
Well, because Timberlake is like a producer and singer
and
dancer.
Actor.
And by the way, a pretty good golfer.
Well, yes. Harry Styles is actually going to make his acting debut in a movie this summer, which normally I would
poo-poo. Would that it were so simple.
He's actually going to be a movie that I'm looking to forward to very much called Dunkirk, which is getting a lot of good press.
So he's in that?
He's in that, yeah.
Get out.
Yeah, he is. I don't know how big his role is in that. But I think it's a lot of sort of little roles as they tell the story of a bunch of different people from that time.
So I turn to you. Is he good?
Well, I'm looking at the Wikipedia listing here for him. According to it, he auditioned as a solo artist for the British TV series The X Factor,
right.
which you remember,
right.
the Simon Cowell thing.
Right.
After being eliminated as a solo performer, he was brought back into the competition along with four other contestants to form One Direction.
Oh,
that's
okay.
So that's
according to Wikipedia, anyways, they would be a fabrication of the X Factor.
It's sort of like the monkeys when they were brought together out of
nothing.
Yes, pretty much out of nothing. Although they all had talent, and they all two of them had been actors at that point.
That's right.
Mickey Dolenz and Davy Jones had been actors at that point.
And Peter Tork was quite an accomplished musician.
Yeah, musician. So what happens, Michael, when he left Wonder?
He was 16.
Is there
at that
no
time,
longer Wonder? Was that the?
Yes,
I think they've all gone solo.
Many directions now.
Okay.
Yeah. Multiple
my
directions.
My understanding was he was sort of the looks of the group. He had the long, tangled hair.
Right.
He did the high, warbling solos. But I didn't think of him as an anchor vocally. I think he's maturing a little bit. This is going a little bit deeper than I ever thought I could on Harry Styles.
I'm a little worried. You've gone as deep as you
can. I know Julia Styles.
But when NSYNC broke up, we knew Justin Timberlake was talented from his work as a kid on the Disney show in the boy band, but we didn't know he had the range that we now look back and see with the second half of his career. So I guess kids are looking forward to seeing what this guy does as a solo.
It's nice that you're wearing the same color.
He did a great Mick Jagger on Saturday Night Live.
Harry Styles did?
With some clips about
okay,
a couple
weeks. I'm just saying that...
Yeah, he's not a no-talent.
There were blocks and blocks and blocks of people camped out for this guy.
Yeah.
So that's a big
Very
deal.
Similar to the people like surrounding Jennifer Street.
Yes. Yeah.
When we
get come to see this show.
Yes, exactly.
We'll come and look at us in
like
the
atrium. Randy Johnson signed with the Yankees.
And press up
Get out of my face. Don't talk back to me, all right?
So I wanted to give you some of Tracy's ideas. Tracy is... my friend Tracy Roberts is the stage manager for the PTI show, and we've been giving out bobblehead dolls here to people who come for breakfast or other little gifts. Tracy thinks that's a good idea. I do too.
They're on eBay now.
She was talking about not dinner theater, but breakfast theater. That was one of her ideas, that you would ask people questions, and if they got it right, you'd get a prize. But the prizes are so terrible, I just give the people the prizes.
Well,
she had this other idea. Tell me what you think of this idea. And this was dinner in a movie. We are no more than 100 yards away from the
Maza Gallery,
where the movies are. I think they are the AMC movies.
Yes, yes.
Right?
That's
the AMC
correct.
Movies.
Nice theater.
Yeah, it's a very nice theater.
And Tracy had this thought that if you went to the movies and presented a ticket stub here, you could get a discount on dinner.
I think that's lovely.
Well, I'm sort of wonder what
Excellent
you think.
Excellent idea.
Do you think that's a good idea?
Sure.
Get people
in.
It
doesn't seem like there's any harm.
Right. Get people in and give them like a small discount.
I've got a better. I got a better idea.
What?
Or what I believe to be a better idea, derivative of Tracy's idea. So I would give Tracy all credit. How about you approach the movie theater and say, if we have people show you their chatter receipt, will you give them a dollar or two off their ticket? And then rather than you giving the discount.
Okay.
They're giving the discount. And you can say, we can promote, dinner and a movie. Dinner's first, after all,
we could do
for dinner and a movie. It's not a movie and dinner. It's dinner and a movie.
It often That's is right. for me.
I think it's
movie
dinner.
Movie first and then dinner.
Yeah. But, you know, but it's not a bad idea. Did anybody see The Full Moon last night?
I did not.
It's beautiful.
No.
You didn't call me. Normally you tell me about the moon phases.
The full moon was
You talked
so
about
beautiful.
Giving away the prizes earlier, and I realized that we should... You've told people that they can come to Chatter and eat breakfast and watch the show, but we should paint the picture a little bit, because you've been very good, very diligent about saying hello to the people, getting out there, touching the people who come, spreading the prizes. Unfortunately, today we had more people than prizes.
Now we have no prizes.
So it's tough to give the prizes
out. I'll get some stuff from the prize closet.
We have a vanilla pudding mix.
We have some, do we still have a bunch of WWTKD bracelets? We could start spreading those around.
I have nice prizes.
See an old bandwagon sticker?
Pine glasses, some
koozies. I thought we had pudding mix.
But for fans of the show and fans of yours specifically, it would be a cool, it is a cool experience.
I'm not sure where this came from. We have a matzo bowl mix.
Yeah,
looks like an MRE.
That's from Ted.
Nice.
Potato pancake mix.
Right, that's great.
And yes, the vanilla pudding mix, which I know.
So that, I think tomorrow, that's going to be the main prize, vanilla pudding mix.
Yes.
For people who want to come in. And all you have to do is spill pudding.
I don't know that you need to like Harry Styles line up, but you probably want to be here by 6:30.
So I meant to mention this yesterday, and we have the bracelets. Yes, we have the bracelets. I meant to mention this yesterday, that the sports reporters on Sunday, that was their last show.
Oh, big deal. Right.
I think I've talked about this before, that I don't really understand why it was canceled, because I didn't think it cost anything to produce. I thought it was fully sponsored. And to me, that's a legacy show. That's the first conversational sports talk show with opinions in the history of ESPN. It's not in the history of anything, but in the history of ESPN. That was the first one, and it started close to 30 years ago. And a lot of people got their starts in television, really, by being on that show. And I was one of them, and Michael Wilbon was one of them. Mitch Albom, Bob Ryan, Mike Lupica, Bill Roden, Ralph Wiley, John Feinstein, you know, a lot of people got on TV for the first time. And when you were asked to be on that show, this was a real feel-good moment for you, that we were all sports writers. There was, you know, it's not like it is now. There was no 24-hour-a-day sports all over the place on TV and radio. There was some, but there wasn't as much as there was now. Yeah, that's a picture with Dick Schaap and Mitch Albom and Leonard Coppett and me a long time ago. That's probably in the late 80s.
That was 91.
Okay, wow. So, okay. And
Tony McDonald.
I had hair at that point. Some hair, anyway. And you felt good about yourself. You felt that you had arrived. You felt you had a particular status beyond some of your friends, and you could.
Was that about TV or about Dick saying, come be on?
It was being on TV. It was because that show was the only conversational sports talk show at the time that ESPN had. So if you were one of a panel of three or four people, you felt, wow, I've arrived. Yeah. Rick Tellender in Chicago used to be on the show a lot. And I mean, in the last 15 years, I don't know all the people that are on it because I'm not on it and don't watch it as much as I used to, but I always...
Harry Styles is on it every
He
day.
May be on it, but I, you know, I mean, I know Pablo Torre was on it and Howard Bryant was on it, and I would be lying to you if I told you I'm going to miss it because I watch it all the time. I'm going to miss the idea of it.
Sure.
I just thought it was really an important show that ESPN had. It wasn't the first sports talk. The first sports talk show was a group of crusty old Chicago sports writers who got together and were on TV locally in Chicago. Wilbon grew up on that show. And this was probably second. And as I've said many times before, it was started by Terry O'Neill. And then ultimately, the first host of it was Gary Thorne. And Gary Thorne is most known as a baseball and hockey broadcaster. I believe he does Orioles games.
He does now.
He did the New York Islanders for a long period of time, and he was the first host. And then as the show got bought and sold and bought and sold, Schaap came in with the second group. Schaap was the host until his death in 2001, I believe, and then John Saunders until his death last year. That was a great staple. And while you can... And Wilbon and I are at least partially responsible for the lack of civility in sports talk, although we're not majorly responsible for that. But we were part of that. That always remained a civil show with civil discourse and intelligent back and forth. And I'm sorry to have seen it go.
Yeah, it's sad.
You saw it. You watched
it. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I watched it regularly when you were on. And I would say, not to make light of it, but I guess a fair... Well, a twisted analogy would be like when you learned that Kodak was not going to make the Polaroid anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, man, that was awesome. But, I mean, you hadn't used one in forever.
A long time. Yeah.
Right. And it's the same way because you can get that so many places. And you can get it on ESPN so many other places.
That's right.
But that was really it.
But for me, this is my homage to that because I really respected it and was very, very grateful to be on it. And did it at some period of time for... 6-8 years, I probably did it, 12, 15 times.
What did the logistics of that look like? You would go up, train up Saturday night or
Saturday
something?
Saturday night. And... Sometimes you would be able to see a show, Broadway show. You'd go buy yourself a ticket.
Was it live Sunday
morning? No, but it was early. What I thought was early. Now I don't think this is so early. You had to be in there for makeup at 7, and you probably started shooting 7:30, 7:45.
Oh, so you're home by noon, 1
still
o'clock.
Got the day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You still got the rest of the day.
Yeah, well, it was Sunday, so normally Sunday. You'd shoot home.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, you could, if you wanted to get on a train, there's always a 9 o'clock train, got you home by 12, and people flew out of there very, very early and had the whole day. But you had to be there Saturday night.
Cool
then they moved it to Bristol, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, or something like that. So I wouldn't have gone. I mean, it's just too hard to get there for me.
Right.
Not that anybody asked.
Well, they had so many people. By that time, they had so many people up there and so many people living in the area. Yeah. It wasn't easy. Right.
But it's a landmark show to me.
Yeah.
One of the things that ESPN can be very proud of. All right, we'll take a break. We will come back with jingles and email. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Press record. All right. Now I'm going to sing. So now I'm gonna sing a song. It's a live jingle, a real important one. but I've got no experience to draw upon. I'd regale you with some lyrics about a wonderful story. Without first-hand history, it would go rather poorly. And now KJ can take over and sing something funny.
Wait a minute. Is this how podcasters make all their money?
It's the chorus. Now I'm singing about doing live reads. I sing the words and the hook from your Google machine. If I keep singing, will I get funded by underwear razors and seeds? Build a course. Do they pay for jingles about live reads? I'm singing a jingle about live reads. I'm repeating these words again because they're important. I'm singing a jingle about live reads.
Jason Fuse with an assist from Kirsten Onstad.
I'm playing the same chords over and over. I bet you didn't notice unless you were paying attention.
Hoo-hoo, that's falsetto.
Singing a jingle about Larry.
I like that. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Barry's Verluga, The Washington Post, for coming on the show today. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Harry's Razors and SeatGeek. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. I also want to thank Michael Sands for, I think, helping us.
La cheeserie!
Yeah.
Yes, la cheeserie.
I want to thank him because we're going to have a cheese board. I told you, the two things I wanted were la cheeserie and perfect truffle.
And so a gun range out back, right?
Yeah, and that. Mike from Burke, Virginia, quoting Saliza, "I wouldn't want that thing on top of me," and then writing, "That's what she said about you, Chris." From Keegan Liff in Cumming, Georgia, "Just so you know, Phil," talking about Phil Mickelson, "learned to play golf by mirroring his father, who was a righty. I imagine this is similar to Michael learning how to throw down 50s with his left hand after mirroring his father." From Mark Corrier in Ellicott City, Maryland, "Best segment in ages was hearing Nigel describe his trip to Vegas. Might I suggest a new show segment? You foot the bill for Nigel to travel to a different city once a month for a weekend getaway. Then Nigel comes back and shares his adventures." Classic. Along these same lines,
this weekend,
from Hampton Nager in Dallas, Texas, "I have to say, Nager, the idea of Nigel at the Vegas Hard Rock is fabulous. I see him now on the plane. He's talking the place up like Chris Clark Griswold selling Wally World. Then he sees he is as welcome as a J.A. Adonde locker room interview. I hope that some woman half his age yelled, 'Bye bye, pervert,' as he walked out the door." Nice. "Perhaps next time, ouch, Nigel should consider booking at the Soft Rock Hotel where Dan Fogelberg gets your luggage. Yeah, and the guys from Bread restock the breadsticks at the buffet. I'm sure they'd upgrade his room from a Leo Sayer Classic King to the Air Supply suit. Sweet, once they know who they're dealing with. All out of love and out of clean towels, Hampton Nager and Dallas."
Many comments,
Texas,
about Nigel flying all the way to Nevada to eat at the Palm, which is walking distance from his house.
Yeah, but it's a restaurant. I know it, and I like it, yes, so I want to eat it.
From Trukowski in Westfield, New Jersey, "Thanks for adding the new section of the pod, breaking down each year of the U.S. Junior Golf Championship. Can you let me know when you will be getting the 2008 so I can have the tape recorder ready for your shot-by-shot breakdown of Cameron Peck's big win?" From Dr. Stanley Daniel, and it is titled "Awkward Dinner Conversation." "Once on a first date, the conversation trended to movie tastes. Her favorite comedies included, quote, 'anything with Rob Schneider,' unquote. Afterwards, I changed my phone number to avoid ever speaking to this person again." Anything with Rob Schneider.
Right. You can do it.
Yeah. And on, from Seth Shaner in New Albany, Ohio, "I hope Nigel asked Gretchen Wu not to listen to Monday's show. I'd hate to have her hear of Nigel's conquest with that cocktail waitress, Clarissa, in Vegas."
That's right.
It stays in Vegas, Nigel. That's the point.
It's innocent enough.
Yeah. From Nate Perius in Billings, Montana, "With regards to your discussion on how long construction takes, please allow me to distribute some information for life. While studying civil engineering in college, my professor gave me the best advice I've ever received. He told the class to, when estimating how long something will actually take to accomplish, take however long the task would take in magical Christmas land where everything goes perfectly, and then double it."
Right.
In magical Christmas land. I love this. "Over the course of my career, both designing and inspecting construction projects, this has proven to be more accurate than I could ever have imagined as a college student. I know it involves math, not typically an English major strong suit, but hopefully this tidbit will make us all the Littles' favorite orange bald man just a bit wiser. I love the concept of magical Christmas land.
Magical Christmas time.
And then double that.
Yes.
And then it's even longer than that and more expensive than that. Can we get a sign? Can we get a sign that said
over
chatter?
That arch.
Can we get something that just said chatter? Could that be that?
Or how about eight Littles or however many letters are in that word to come paint their chests and stand out there? That
from Steve Sunbeck in Arlington, Virginia. Did we talk about the Pyongyang University of Science and Technology the other day?
Yes.
Where the guy was a professor.
Yeah.
Good old Pust, home of the Fighting Pustules.
Well, yeah.
Whose basketball team is renowned for an average 170-23 victory and shooting 97% from behind the arc.
That's a good game.
From Stephen Halter, Steve the Sycophant. Nigel's recitation of his Las Vegas Halter adventures were fascinating, but I must disagree with some of his comments. First of all, if you're 48, you're not old. Believe me, at 75, I know. Second, dear Nigel should not assume he'll always be a bachelor. My great uncle Ben waited until he was 83 to marry. The bride was 18, and he was tremendously happy for about 3 hours after the ceremony when he died. But he died happy, although I'm not sure about his bride. She did, though, enjoy the proceeds of his life insurance. Anyway, maybe Nigel can take me along to ride shotgun on his next trip to Vegas. I was last there as a bachelor in 1971 on a return trip from Vietnam, and I'd love to see if any of the young ladies I chased are still around and receiving Social Security payments. Keep on potting. If you're out on your bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
La chiserie.
Yeah.
I got those old man hands and the weird yellow skin. Looking up on top, looking mighty thin. Take a little blue pill just to get it right. There once was a time I'd be up all night. Those days are gone now. Don't know what to say. Try to make some plans, even though I got these old man hands. Spots and some type 2 sugar. Take a pill for this and that, but nothing further. Got the same thoughts now I did when I was 23, you see. Only problem is now it's considered creepy. Only for wimps, because the time, you understand, is running out quickly. I've got those old man hands. Old age ain't for wins. No, no, no.